We have quorum. How's that for, the teacher voice. So we have five bills on the agenda today. Senator Morrison, please lead off with a discussion on Senate File 1468. And you have an amendment?
Mr. Chair, I do have the A2, which is a delete all amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll move it for you.
Okay, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, the floor is yours, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 1468 as amended, a bill to require annual mental health and substance use disorder screening on students in kindergarten through grade 12. I first introduced this bill when I served in the other body several years ago when a medical student and several high school students brought the idea to me. It went through the committee process there and is the result of feedback and suggestions from NAMI, disability advocates, mental health professionals, educators, and lawmakers. We've known that children's mental health challenges have been rising for years and accelerated during and after the pandemic. We can debate the reasons, but the fact is that our young people are needing more support than we are currently providing them. If there are any silver linings to the pandemic, one of them is the growing destigmatization of mental illness and a recognition that mental health is health. Given that changing landscape and the clear need, now is the time to do everything we can to meet it. This bill provides a way to help identify those at risk and connect them with the resources they need. As a reminder, I'd like to share some sobering statistics. Mental health emergency room visits among youth ages 12 to 17 increased 31% between 2019 and 2020. And in 2021, emergency room visits for suicide attempts was up 51% among girls in the same age range. Some other data points provided by NAMI include only 1/3 of high school students felt they were able to cope with their sources of stress. 1 in 3 high school students and half of female students reported persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness. 2/3 of parents report that their child has struggled with their mental health, and 1/3 say their child's mental health is worse than before the pandemic. Senate File 1468, as amended, requires that school districts develop a plan to conduct mental health and substance use disorder screenings on students in grades K through 12. If the results indicate a potential mental health condition, the district must notify the student's parent of the results and of resources available to the student in the school or community. It explicitly states that mental health and substance use disorder screening tool that is utilized be evidence-based. It states that the parent must be notified prior to a screening and the parent must consent to the screening. It mandates that the parent be provided a copy of the results. The results of the screening may not be used to make any decision relating to the student's instruction or academic opportunities or student discipline. And it states explicitly that the mental health and substance use disorder screenings must be maintained in accordance with the Data Practices Act and the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. It calls for the mental health and substance use disorder screening data to be destroyed after the student's parent is notified of the results and resources available or 60 days from the date of collection, whichever is earlier. And finally, it explicitly includes intermediate school districts and other cooperative units. Mr. Chair, we have a generation of children who are living through unprecedented times and need extra support. Our kids are asking for our help, and we must meet this moment for them and with them. We have to approach this crisis from many different angles. Asking them how they are doing and identifying those at high risk is a first step. And then making sure they can access a mental health professional for a diagnostic assessment is the next step. What we cannot do is nothing. Our young people are struggling, and we need to support them so they can become healthy adults. Their future, and of course then all of our futures, depends on it. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to my testifiers. Beginning with the one to my left.
No, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, National Alliance on Mental Illness. And I want to thank Senator Morrison for bringing this bill forward. We know our children are not doing well. The student survey found that all positive mental well-being components dropped significantly from 2016 to 2022. Students reported not feeling in control of their life and future, not feeling good about themselves, not being able to deal with disappointment without getting upset, and not having good coping strategies. The survey found increases in anxiety symptoms, depression symptoms, and suicidal ideation. From 2015 to 2020, 51 youth aged 10 to 14 died by suicide, and 267 teens aged 15 to 19 died by suicide. Research estimates that at least 1 in 5 students will experience a significant mental health problem during their school years. Mental health plays an important role in a student's social, emotional, and academic success. We also are more cognizant of the fact that good mental health is not simply the absence of mental illness, but also having the skills necessary to cope with life's challenges. School-wide universal screening for mental health issues is a practice that is recommended by the National Association of School Psychologists, the National Research Council, the National Center for School Mental Health, and the Institute of Medicine. It is recognized as an essential component of a multi-tiered school behavioral health framework, a framework that we have been working on in Minnesota with school support personnel and school-linked mental health. I want to make it clear that screening is not diagnosing. It's more like taking your temperature. You might have a slightly elevated temperature or fever, but it doesn't tell us why, and it actually might not be of concern once we look further. Screenings tell us that something may be going on with a student, and we need to gather more information to find out how we can best support them. Universal screening can help with early identification of students who are at risk or who have internalizing symptoms. For some students, we might not notice that they are depressed because they don't have externalizing symptoms. We aren't seeing behaviors that are causing concerns, so we don't dig deeper. Screening students and identifying ones that may need further assessment can shift from a reactive to a proactive approach and enables us to provide early intervention before it becomes serious. There are many materials out there to help the Department of Ed implement this, including a report from SAMHSA entitled Ready, Set, Go Review, Screening for Behavioral Health Risk in Schools. There's great articles from the National Institute of Mental Health and the National Center for School Mental Health. There are some who say that if we don't have the services to meet the needs, we shouldn't conduct screening. As a parent, I would want to know if my child screens positive for depression or anxiety. Closing our eyes to the need won't make it go away. Intervening early may limit the need for more intensive services in the future. On behalf of NAMI Minnesota, I urge your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next three testifiers are, I believe, all virtual. So we'll start with Ramanathan, and then Pandy, and then Obel is the sequence.
Hello, everybody. Just wanted to make sure that everybody can hear me. Okay, awesome. Well, my name is Vandana Ramanathan, and I am currently a junior from Eden Prairie High School. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me to talk today about the bill that's being discussed. Now, I'm the co-founder of a national youth-led organization called the Youth Equity Project, where we focus on our current educational system and some of the narratives that we choose to pursue regarding that. But I am also somebody who has faced significant mental health issues and is somebody who currently attends high school. But the truth is, I am not the only one who struggles with my mental health. A lot of people can't access proper mental health treatment at home, whether it's because of finances, accessibility, or the stigma surrounding it. This is the harsh reality for thousands of students all over Minnesota. Now, my school has faced more suicides in the past 2 years than ever before, and we need to start taking action. Now, it is a common truth that mental health has been getting worse as the years go on, whether it's because of the expansion of social media or the pandemic transforming everybody's lives. However, it is the job of the educational system to ensure that students can pursue what they want to do and can take part in their passions with nothing coming in the way. However, in the status quo, there is something coming in the way for thousands of hardworking, passionate, driven students, their mental health. Because of the lack of importance placed upon mental health and on the well-being of our K-12 students, we enforce the belief that mental health should be ignored, exacerbating issues like academic pressure, depression, anxiety, and many other mental health issues within schools. As somebody who has struggled with mental health in the past, I can say with certainty that educational institutions are at the forefront of true change, and that enacting a policy such as this by placing mental health screening options for students will drastically change the lives for thousands of students all over Minnesota and will ensure that we can address the problem at its root. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Adya Pandey?
Hello, everybody. Oh, just want to make sure everyone can hear me all right. Perfect. All right. Hi, everybody. My name is Adya Pandey, and I am a junior at Eden Prairie High School. I'm also the other co-founder of the Youth Equity Project, a national youth-led nonprofit aimed at addressing the lack of proper prioritization of mental health amongst our communities. During my time in this position, I've had the opportunity to learn how imperative it is that we begin to acknowledge this evidently under-addressed issue across our own schools. Even in my school and in my experiences, I've seen my classmates and even faculty struggle with the harms of mental health throughout my past couple years in high school, which is why I believe it is crucial we take steps like introducing mental health screening to combat this. When analyzing statistics regarding youth mental health, the unfortunate reality is that in many areas we are only going backwards, with academic pressures and students grappling with mental health challenges increasing at alarming amounts. But many of these struggles go unnoticed or undetected. This is why we must address this issue now. Expanding mental health screening to schools is a proactive step towards bettering the lives of countless students suffering in silence. Schools have a responsibility to provide a productive and welcoming environment for its students. And with mental health remaining sadly low in our social agenda, it is more crucial than ever that a bill like this is finally introduced. With screening in place, we would finally be able to accomplish a school's true goal to the full extent, to educate their students. With normalizing the discussion surrounding mental health, we'd be able to truly destigmatize this subject and give students the care they need. That is why mental health screening is the first of countless much-needed measures that need to be taken for the sake of our communities. I urge you to support this bill so that we leave no student behind and fulfill our responsibilities to the students in the schools of Minnesota.
Thank you. And next, Sianna Obo. Okay, next speaker is Julie Campanelli. Thank you. Again. Okay. And identify yourself and sign in. I think that's all the directives.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, good afternoon, Honorable Chair and committee members. My name is Julie Campanelli, and I'm the president of the Minnesota School Social Workers Association, and I'm also a school social worker in District 196. I'm here today to express my support for the implementation of mental health screeners in school. As someone deeply invested in the well-being of our students, I firmly believe that mental health screeners are essential tools that empower school mental health professionals to address the diverse and complex needs of our student population. We do not need to look far for confirmation of the mental health crises that our youth are facing. According to the 2022 Minnesota Student Survey, students reported experiencing an unprecedented amount of long-term mental health problems. Here are some startling statistics that should give us all pause. 28% of respondents indicated that they had serious suicidal thoughts. 20% of males and 45% of female students reported long-term mental health, behavioral, or emotional problems. Mental health screeners serve as a proactive instrument for early identification and intervention. By systematically screening students for potential mental health concerns, we can identify issues at their early stages, allowing for a timely and targeted support. Recently at my school, we screened all students second through fifth grade. Based on our results, a number of students came to our attention, students that otherwise, quite frankly, would have fallen through the cracks. Armed with our standardized assessment tool and the information gathered, we have been able to have conversations about our students' well-being and develop interventions for them benefiting their emotional well-being and academic performance. We appreciate the concerns raised about funding. Mental health screening will take a significant amount of resources, and it won't be effective if there are not staff to follow through on students who need help. Early intervention through mental health screening can mitigate the long-term impact of mental health challenges and can significantly improve a student's overall well-being and academic performance. Thank you.
Is the student testifier, Sienna, available?
Can you guys hear me clearly?
We can, thank you.
I will start off with, hello, my name is Sienna Obel, and I'm a junior at Eden Prairie High School. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify. Firstly, destruction causes transformation, but transformation is inevitable and a part of life. Within the latter stages of youth, many transformations occur, and youth across Minnesota deserve access to resources that help us through these transformations. Personally, I come from a family that doesn't necessarily talk about a constantly transforming thing, mental health. As a first generation American, and as the eldest daughter of my family, I have had a standard placed upon me that was always ascending further from my reach as I grew. This cycle is hard to explain to even the trained eye, so long as that eye is of a person that has not experienced what I've experienced firsthand, or is not knowledgeable enough to recognize it within me. And of course, I've thought about sharing this overwhelming feeling of never being enough with my friends. However, I doubt sometimes they would understand. My specific story is not necessarily a common denominator amongst teens in Minnesota, but the feeling of being alone is. That is where you come in. By instituting mental health screenings across Minnesota schools, you increase the accessibility of mental health resources, allowing every individual a shot at recognizing certain behaviors within themselves. A simple appointment with a school psychiatrist may be just what a student needs to recognize these patterns in the first place. This recognition gives youth a foundation that will allow individuals a fair chance at success in school, communities, and work. This is especially needed for youth living in the modern era in which the effects of excessive screen time and access to any sort of media at any given moment is still being researched. Ultimately, this is a new era of youth that needs a new set of tools to be successful. And with these tools, I can only hope to build a better future with my peers alongside me. Thank you.
Thank you, testifiers, particularly the three students that took time out of their day to testify. We always appreciate hearing from young people. Members, Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple of questions, if that's okay. And the first two are for Ms. Campanelli, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Thank you.
The first question is, could you just, you mentioned the significant resources required to do screening. Could you just give us an idea of what does that look like? What does that mean when we use the term mental health screening? What are we talking about?
Well, mental health screenings, there's a variety of different tools. All of them have a cost that's associated with it. So there is that piece of it. And then the other part of it is that you need staff to be able to intervene and react and do the hard work of connecting and meeting the needs of children.
If I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And I think you mentioned that you do some of this work or help with it in District 196. I'm curious, right now, if there was a let's use a high school student as an example. A high schooler either self-identifies as maybe requiring some help or wanting to learn about some resources, or maybe a staff member picks up on something as pertains to a particular student. Are there resources currently available within that district that could be utilized to help have a conversation with that student, potentially screen them and point them in the direction of resources should they choose, or is that something that doesn't exist currently?
There are resources in our school district. For example, we have counselors, school social workers, psychologists, and even our nurses. And we're kind of a team. We don't call ourselves the mental health team, but we are kind of a team, and we all work together to meet the needs of all of our students.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, if I may. Next question would be for the bill author. So, Senator Morrison, when I look at the original bill and I look at your the amendment or the new bill, I notice there's a fairly significant portion of the bill that no longer exists, and that's the appropriations portion. So I'm just curious, were there any ideas or estimates, or did you have a number in mind originally with the bill regarding an appropriation? And also, if there was at first, why was that removed, I guess, in the bill? As we look at it now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Duckworth. When this bill was initially introduced, it was before some of the significant investments that were made last year were made, and so we took them out this year. I think, to be frank, I think going forward, we'll need to assess what the need is. Some of it is still an unknown, but we do know that our kids are struggling, and we need to be identifying the ones who need extra help.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may, I think we've gotten a little bit of an idea of what the costs, logistics, and staffing issues would be to do something like this at the scale that we're talking about here. Obviously, not that we're against providing resources to students as it pertains to their mental health, but when you talk about mandating an annual screening for every one of the 850,000 students, K through 12, in public schools in Minnesota, while that may be a noble endeavor, I think many school districts hear that and think, my God, how are we going to afford, implement, and actually do that in terms of staffing and resources, et cetera? And if you're keeping up with the news, we just saw that districts all across the state find themselves about $300 million in the hole when it comes to their budgets. So I think figuring out the financial resource piece of this bill and making sure it accompanies what you're trying to pass will be critical to actually allowing districts and schools and the folks that will have to do it accomplish it. Otherwise, they're going to find themselves in an even deeper hole that they're still trying to dig themselves out of financially. The only other thing I would say is I do very much appreciate the fact that your bill calls for parents being informed about it and having the potential to potentially opt out if they choose to. I think maybe finding a way that ensures they opt in would also be important. And I say that as a former school board member. What I wouldn't have to have happen is I get a call from a parent and they're told, well, we went ahead and screened your child because we told you we were going to and you never told us not to, right? I feel a parent should have to affirm that, yes, they want it to occur when they're talking about their children. So I offer all of that as hopefully constructive, helpful feedback as pertains to the bill. It's a very, very well-intended bill that could help kids, but I think if we're going to do it and we want districts to do it successfully, it's got to be backed up with the resources to allow them to actually do it. So thank you.
Senator May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Morrison, I think, just correct me if I'm wrong, but the delete all or the delete everything, you do have to give affirmative consent in order for students to be screened. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator May Quaid, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair. I had one question. I saw that on the delete everything 1.15, if the results are positive, they go to the parents. Are they going to send the negative results to parents? That might be information parents might want to know.
Mr. Chair and Senator May Quaid, interesting question. The bill is written just to alert parents to a positive screen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's probably probably fine, but, you know, one thing to consider is maybe just sending the results, because I don't know, sometimes screenings can show some characteristics or, you know, but not, it's not like positive negative. It's like, hey, there are some here, there are some there. So it might be useful for parents. I really appreciate you bringing this bill. I think one thing that as adults we can forget sometimes is that you don't, even adults don't know when they have something like anxiety or depression. I developed anxiety when I was in college, and I had no idea I was having a panic attack. I just went to my mom. I said, I feel really weird, and I have felt super weird for like 3 days. I didn't have the language. I knew I felt weird. I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know what it was anxiety, and I was 21. And so when we're talking about especially young children, these screeners are so important, because it's not like a six-year-old's going to walk up to you and be like, Mom, I think I'm anxious. Let's talk about some resources for that. It really does require the input and the support of all the, you know, the village that we build around children to make sure that we are screening and catching these and giving parents as much information as possible so that they can make good decisions too. So I really, really appreciate this bill, and I'm really glad that my daughter is going to be going to school in a world where you've been able to shape our policies. Thank you.
Senator Abler.
Well, thank you, and you've answered some of my questions. That's good. This has been a concern of mine for a long time, and, you know, and I see the bill, I don't know if it's going to move or if it's practical to do it now, but I see it as certainly the aspiration I totally endorse, and maybe I can sign on if you don't mind. But I just do have a couple questions. So the idea is that if all the parents, so the parents have to, just not sending the form back in is not going to be considered consent. They actually, here's like at your office, if you treat a minor for something, you have to have a form from the parent. And is that, just say it again for me, if you don't mind, Senator Morrison, that yes, that's true.
Mr. Chair and Senator Abler, it explicitly does say that a district or charter school must not conduct a mental health or substance use disorder screening on a student whose parent has not consented to the screening.
All right. I've been here long enough just to be a little nervous about how some people might consider consent, so not dissenting. But so I'm happy it's an opt-in. That's appropriate and as it should be. And actually, if you don't send the negative results, it might reduce the burden on the school. In the model you have without the money, is it your thought, do you expect that on line 1.8 that that they'd use those student support services personnel to conduct these without adding more staff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Abler, yes.
All right. And I hope we can do something like this. Anoka, in the past, if you remember, Mr. Chair and others, had 8 suicides and 8 suicides in 100 years is too many, but we had 8 in a short amount of time. And so Anoka really put an effort into this. We hired every school as an LPCC, and there was a much heightened awareness, and there's student activity. As much as the students were active here, a lot of them got active there. And so, you know, this builds on what can be done. So if it moves forward, I hope that there's a recognition that there aren't enough of those professionals around to screen. We have a hard time filling up our complement of those that we need. Right now, suddenly our districts are all cash strapped. Mr. Chair, I don't know if you know, but the 41 districts in this cluster here are short $317 million based on the contracts they've signed. And so if keep working, and I'll cheer for this to become even a bigger thing. And maybe as it goes forward, districts can accomplish this in some way that is their best effort. So thank you.
Senator Wiesenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question on the first page, I guess 1.29, if you could just explain to me what that means. It just says data collected, looks like needs to be destroyed. And then on the next page, I just explain to me, is that what's happening and why we do that? I just don't know.
Mr. Chair and Senator Wiesenberg, that provision in the bill came from the committee process in the other body. And the idea mostly came from the disability advocacy community and other communities who are concerned that their children sometimes can be marginalized in our schools. So they didn't want a positive screen to stay in a student's record and then kind of be used against the student, so that a kid is labeled a bad kid or a troubled kid or something. So the idea is that screen doesn't travel with the the student throughout their career.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, Senator Morrison, any wrap up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for an interesting and informative discussion. I think this is a really important effort. We cannot turn away from the challenge that our students are facing. So I hope that we're able to continue to work on this bill and make it so.
And I just can't thank you enough and all the members involved with this issue. We all know our kids are you know, our most valuable resource, and they're hurting for a myriad of reasons. We could brainstorm a list a mile long, but nonetheless, they are hurting and they're struggling, and they need the adults' help. And so I appreciate you bringing this idea forward. So thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Abler, you want to make your motion?
Please.
We're sending it to Ed Finance.
Mr. Chair, I would be pleased to do that motion. Thank you. Thanks for asking.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
For who?
For you.
Go ahead.
Is it going to Ed Finance because we think there is going to be a fiscal impact or a spend, or?
Yeah, potentially.
Okay, very good. All righty.
It's not because we like playing ping pong. Right. So, Senator Abler, did you make your motion? I'm sorry. Yeah. You know who you're sitting next to right now, I'm aware. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, motion carries. Thank you, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Kunesh has two bills up next. Senator May Quaid, would you make a motion that Senate File 1468 be, do you have an amendment?
So moved.
I do have an amendment, but what bill number did you just say? Well, I'm ready for 3474 or 3471. Okay. Okay. Let's do that one.
And you do have an amendment?
I do. So, Mr. Chair, I have before you Senate File 3474. This is to create a digital citizenship and internet safety council. And I have in front of you the A1 amendment. The A1 amendment simply increases the membership from 19 to 21 by adding two academic librarians to the committee.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The amendment passes. Begin your presentation, Senator.
Thank you so much. I have a bill here. The two that I'm presenting today are very near and dear to me. But this first one is around digital citizenship. And I think we have seen those reports that show that Minnesota is at the lowest of all the states as far as digital literacy. And so I am proposing here a digital citizenship, internet safety, and media literacy advisory council. As a library media specialist of 20 years, we were the leaders in most of the schools around technology. We did get training for technology, but a lot of the burden fell on it. So, for example, when I was in the kindergarten through fifth grade school, I taught all the technology skills, from how to use a mouse to all the Microsoft documents, performances, all of those sort of things. And we followed two things. We followed ITEM, which is the International and Technology Education, Information and Technology Educators of Minnesota, who provided the leadership and provided standards for the framework around technology in schools. And we also followed ISTE, which is the International Society for Technology and Education. In 2017, 18, a bunch of us library media specialists got together and we refreshed a lot of the standards that were that we were following. And I just want to share with you the kind of standards that were divided into seven strands. The first strand was inquire and design, where students would develop strategies or design processes to find information solutions relevant to their question or personal need. The second one was connect globally, where students worked effectively with others to broaden perspectives and work toward common goals. The third strand is collaborate, communicate, and create, where students participated effectively in groups to pursue and generate information. Strand four was to collect, organize, and curate, so students accessed and gathered information with efficiency and effectively. Strand five was to discover, read, and reflect. So students had to, the students gained an increased enjoyment of literature and information text, and we wanted them to grow in their ability to locate and select, this is an important one, locate and select appropriate reading material independently, so they were able to use the internet or the library system to locate those resources that they wanted and use them independently. We really were working on independence. Strand six was to engage our students as digital citizens, and we really stressed the part about digital citizens. And in this strand, students were asked to demonstrate safe, legal, and ethical creations and sharing of knowledge products independently while engaging in a community of practice. So that was like taking those appropriate reading materials and resources and putting them into some kind of a form, whether it was a PowerPoint or a written report or a slideshow of some sort, and then be able to share that information with the rest of us independently. And then the last strand was to problem solve, where students were able to develop and employ strategies for understanding and solving problems in a way that leveraged the power of computational thinking, cycles of design, implementation, and reflection. So those were what guided us as library media specialists, those of us that did the technology education. But as more and more library media specialists were let go, computer labs were closed, libraries were closed, a lot of these practices were lost or didn't even happen within the schools, or specific teachers might teach it in their own classroom, but generally a lot of this got lost. And thus, we find ourselves at the bottom of the list of states that have that kind of digital literacy, citizenship and practice. And so this bill would establish a 21-person advisory council composed of classroom teachers, licensed library media specialists, somebody from the Minnesota Regional Public Library System, academic librarians, those who are have expertise in digital citizenship, expertise in internet safety, and expertise in media literacy. And so I do have a couple of testifiers here to talk a little bit more about this, and happy to hear from them at this time.
So Sarah Swenson and Carrie Youngstrand, if you are here, and you can make your way down and sign up and identify yourself.
Sorry, I'm online.
Don't apologize, but thank you for being here. Sarah, you're first.
Sounds good. Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Sarah Swenson. I am the licensed library media specialist and a national board certified teacher. This fall marked my 25th year teaching at Edina High School. I am also a past president of the Information and Technology Educators of Minnesota, which is the school library division of the Minnesota Library Association, and I am the current president-elect of the Minnesota Library Association. Thank you for your support of school libraries during the 2023 legislative session. Because of your work, great strides are being made in defining school libraries, increasing per pupil funding for school library aid, and supporting our multi-county, multi-type libraries. The work, though, is not done. I'm here today to ask for your support of Senate File 3474, the creation of a Digital Citizenship, Internet Safety, and Media Literacy Advisory Council. As our society becomes increasingly digitized and interconnected, we must prioritize online safety and responsible digital citizenship. The internet has opened up vast new opportunities for learning, communication, and access to information. However, it has also created new risks, challenges, particularly for young people growing up immersed in digital environments. Cyberbullying, online predators, exposure to inappropriate content, and the spread of misinformation are just some of the threats that our students can face. At the same time, issues around data privacy, digital literacy, and the ethical use of technology have become more paramount than ever before. Walk down any high school hallway and you'll see students creating TikTok videos. Kids think the dance videos are fun to make, but they may not know about the negative mental health impacts these platforms have and long-term consequences like depression from waiting for validation from likes and shares. The same thing with Instagram. Countless studies show the negative impact this social media platform has on teens, in particular young women. And what about artificial intelligence? Students need to be taught how to spot deep fakes and understand the racial bias that can exist based on bad data. And finally, let's talk about the addictive doom scroll. In his 2023 report, Our Epidemic of Loneliness and Isolation, the U.S. Surgeon General notes that the percentage of teens ages 13 to 17 who say they are online almost constantly has doubled since 2015, and that when looking at social media specifically, as of 2022, 95% of teens report that it would be hard to give up these apps. A key data point of this report was that participants who reported using social media for more than 2 hours a day had about double the odds of reporting increased perceptions of social isolation compared with those who use social media for less than 30 minutes a day. Students need librarians and teachers to help them navigate this landscape. At the high school where I teach, I have 5 chessboards in our school library, and they are constantly in use. When students are playing chess or watching their friends play, they're not online using their phones. It is a wonderful sight. By incorporating digital literacy standards into the curriculum, schools can ensure that students can develop necessary skills to thrive in a digital world, think critically about online information, communicate effectively, and become responsible digital citizens. The ITEM standards have already been referenced as a starting point. They're based on the American Association of School Librarian standards, as well as those of the International Society of Technology and Education. This is a great starting point for this proposed committee. The recommendations made by this committee will provide critical information to ensure that Minnesota's K-12 students have the skills to effectively use technology and the knowledge to do so safely and responsibly. The role of a licensed school librarian teaching these essential skills is supported by the money approved last year, ensuring a pathway that all students and teachers are educated on this topic. I strongly support Senate File 3474 because it provides a framework for our schools and digital literacy. It provides educational progress, increases online safety, and promotes the understanding of digital responsibility. I hope you will lend us your support to this bill as well. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Carrie Youngstrand, I know you're ready.
Yes, I am ready. Thank you, Chair, and the committee for allowing me to testify today. My name is Carrie Youngstrand, and I am the Director of Library Services at the University of Minnesota in Crookston, Minnesota. We are the smallest campus of the University of Minnesota. Well, not the smallest. We are the furthest north, is what I should say. And but what that means is that I work closely with incoming freshmen, and I spend a lot of time working with their digital literacy. And what I have found over the past 5 years,